You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org.
There's an app for that.
Sometimes you can feel a little bit like you're, just a little bit, like you're living in that famous novel, that dystopian novel, 1984, where words change their meaning. Sometimes a word that once meant one thing now means its opposite. And I wonder about the word tolerance, because we're said to live in an age of new tolerance, but it seems less tolerant, truly tolerant, than ever before. We're going to be talking about this new tolerance for the remainder of this hour of Issues Etc. It's Thursday afternoon, March the 22nd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Joining us to talk about the new tolerance, or the, as he puts it in his latest book, the intolerance of tolerance, Dr. D.A. Carson. He's a research professor of New Testament at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School in Deerfield, Illinois. Dr. Carson, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Nice to be with you, Todd.
Can you give us an example first of this new tolerance in the civil realm, and then in a minute, the religious realm?
Yeah, it's probably worth pausing to define what the new tolerance is, first of all, and then it's easy to give lots and lots of examples. The old tolerance said, "I may dislike what you are saying, but I defend to the death your right to say it." In other words, it didn't pretend that you agreed with everybody or that everybody was equally right. But you refuse to apply coercion, especially state coercion. If you refuse to apply state coercion and let people disagree with you or with the church or with the state, then you were still a tolerant person. And what that did was allow you space to disagree honestly and still carry on a warm but civil discourse. But with a new tolerance, it becomes wrong to say that somebody else is wrong. At least in certain domains, that's the case. The one thing you can't say is that someone else is wrong. And that is considered the worst possible offense. It's gauche, it's bigoted, it's narrow-minded, it's right-wing, all the negative terms that you can associate with it. When blatantly, very often, people are really saying quite different things. So this is not in every domain of life, but it's pretty common. And so, for example, in culture, many, many people have argued that every culture is of equal value to every other culture. Well, that's because you can't say anybody is wrong. I can understand what they're trying to protect, because it's possible to become very nationalistic and arrogantly proud and really quite stupid about one's own culture. On the other hand, does one really want to say, let's say, that the culture of the Amish is exactly of the same value as the culture of the Nazis? Well, probably not. In other words, it becomes a foolish position to maintain, even though it's a very popular one that's out there. And in the religious sphere, it's even worse. Faith becomes defined as a personal, subjective religious commitment. But because it's personal and subjective and has nothing to do with the domain of truth, therefore, who are you to suggest that anybody else's faith should be questioned at any point? Which is very different from how the Bible uses the word faith. In the Bible, faith is only as valid as the object of faith. If you believe something that isn't true, the Bible doesn't commend you for it. The Bible says that your faith is in vain and foolish. So that means it becomes impossible to have civil discussion between people of opposing faiths, differing faiths, and saying, why do you think yours is true? These are the reasons why I think what I believe is true. And I think, quite frankly, because of that, you are mistaken. But to do that today already puts you on the defensive, because it means that you are labeled intolerant and bigoted just because you think someone else is mistaken. In other words, the new tolerance actually undermines intelligent civil discourse, all in the name of a tolerance that really is remarkably intolerant to everybody who disagrees with it.
Can you give us and the history here is long, and you chronicle it in some great detail in the middle chapters of your book, but can you give us a brief history of how we got from Tolerance meaning there is a right and a wrong, both morally and propositionally, but I will tolerate you being wrong. I will put up with that. You'll still be wrong. Two, there is no right and there is no wrong, either morally or propositionally. How did we get there?
Well, today, people don't say quite so much that there is no right or wrong. That there was a sort of older postmodernism that argued along those, what I call a strong postmodernism that argued that. But that's being argued less and less. What's argued instead today is something like, there may be right or wrong, but we can't know it for sure. Or it all depends on your point of view and the angle that you take to look at the thing. So it's not quite as decisive in saying there is no right or wrong. It's just making everything, finally, hostage to particular viewpoints. We didn't get here on one easy step. There was the changing wave of postmodernism, although as an intellectual position, that one is drying up now pretty fast, even though its detritus, its rubbish heap, is still around. But also, other things have contributed, both good and bad. World migration populations, so that we've become far, far, far more aware of other cultures. And in itself, that's not bad. You go to many, many major metropolitan areas, and you could, for a whole month, you could eat at a restaurant that partakes of a different culture every night. Indian, and then Bengali, and then Turkish, and then Chinese of three or four different sorts, and Italian, and on and on and on and on. Because our metropolitan cities have become wonderful beehives of the diversity of human cultures. And then our electronic media have exposed us to things in many, many different places. Now, none of that guarantees that you then have to conclude that all cultures are the same. But if you marry all of these experiential phenomena with the impact of postmodernism, plus the fears that human beings have this side of the 20th century, which was the bloodiest century in human history, and therefore some people are calling for just being more tolerant, as if that's going to solve everything. And then tolerance itself gets redefined in all of this. A lot of different pressures have conspired to bring this about. And some of the reasons might be well-motivated, and some of them are just historically ignorant, I'm afraid.
Is it I'm kind of trying to take it apart. Is it, at its heart, a failure to distinguish between diversity and pluralism as a fact of life, and diversity and pluralism as a
as an essential good?
Yes, that's what I was looking for.
An essential and necessary good. That's certainly part of it. One can delight in the diversity and remember that God, according to Acts 17, made all people everywhere and is sovereign over all cultures and so on. Or one can then take another step, which takes God out of the assessment, out of the evaluation at all, and therefore say, therefore all cultures are equally good. Well, that is not only objectionable from a Christian point of view, it's even objectionable from a point of view of mere rationality. It's just a bit silly to say that every culture is equally good when you take a look at the various cultures that have erupted in the 20th century. Was the culture of Stalinism that put to death at least 20 million people apart from war the same as the culture of the Amish or whatever group you want to say? I mean, it's a ridiculous position, yet it is still defended vociferously.
Is it philosophically kind of a perspectivism? That is, I mean, I'm thinking here in kind of those classical Nietzschean terms,
right,
that the only knowledge we have is knowledge from a perspective. And therefore, that's all the farther we can go in valuing something.
Yeah, that's part of it. That's part of it. I mean, but the Christian answer needs to be very careful. There is a sense in which we are all perspectivalists. That's part of being finite. The only complete non-perspectivalist is God, because he can see everything about absolutely everything. So it's important that Christians should not answer the sort of pure secularist perspectivalist by saying, no, that's not correct. Carl Henry used to say something like, there are two kinds of perspectivalists, those who admit it and those who don't. But on the other hand, If you're a perspectivalist without having any voice from God speaking into the situation, a voice from God who is omniscient and who doesn't see the past and the present and the future, then you really are locked into a certain kind of perspectivalism. Even then, you ought to be able to use a modicum of common grace to see that not all cultures are equally valuable in every respect. But what the Christian wants to argue is, even though we cannot see everything as God sees it, God has disclosed himself so powerfully, so greatly, out of the perfection of his perfect knowledge, that we can see some things from his perspective, which shifts our ability to evaluate absolutely everything. So it really becomes a hugely filtering sort of device. We are, in short, so far as it is possible for finite human beings to do so, to think God's thoughts after him.
You write this, and about a minute to respond before our break. At the risk of sounding paranoid or petty, I must say that a disproportionate part of the intolerance that masks itself as the new tolerance is directed against Christians and Christianity. What do you mean by that? With about a minute or so before our break.
What I mean by it is that it's possible to find this new tolerance aimed in all kinds of directions. Cultural, as you've said, I've seen it aimed against some atheist groups on university campuses. But there is more heat in the press and in the media against historic Christianity than any other religion. Things that can be said that are brutally cruel with respect to Christians and their faith would never be said in our culture with respect to Muslims and their faith, for example. And it's partly just a new generation reacting against its past.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more with Dr. D.A. Carson, author of the book The Intolerance of Tolerance, about the new tolerance. It's Thursday afternoon, March the 22nd. Our call-in number, we invite your questions or comments as we come to you live this Thursday, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at @issuesetc. When we come back, we'll talk about democracy and the new tolerance.
South Africa,
China,
Germany,
Trinidad and Tobago.
Did you know that people listen to Issues Etc. around the world? India,
Sweden, Egypt, France,
Turkey, Japan,
Australia, Canada,
United Kingdom, Hong Kong,
Austria, Finland,
Malaysia, Singapore, Bulgaria,
Korea, Brazil.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Help us proclaim Christ to the world.
The Philippines,
Mexico, Spain,
New Zealand, Kuwait.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
I'm not a Christian, but I listen to your show because actually you do have some interesting topics.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
You believe that there's not one error in the Bible. That's intellectually infantile. You also believe that Jesus is coming again. You promote extremely sexually repressive views.
The Issues Etc. comment line. Available 24/7. 618-223-8382.
Have fun waiting for Jesus to return. Got news for you. He ain't coming back.
Real Reformation Radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Is it okay to kill a newborn infant?
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Apparently, it is okay to take a newborn infant's life if you do so in Canada. A Canadian judge recently refused to punish a woman who strangled her own newborn baby. Justice Joanne Vite acknowledged the defendant committed infanticide, but said Canadians are sympathetic towards women with unwanted pregnancies. She pointed out that is why Canada places virtually no regulations on abortions. By her reasoning, then, because Canadians sympathize with women who have unwanted pregnancies, Canadians would not want to punish the defendant who simply waited to abort her baby until after he was born.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Noted author and history professor Dr. Paul Meyer on the uniqueness of Issues Etc.
I'm delighted not only to listen to Issues Etc., but also to have the privilege of being on the program from time to time. Issues is never afraid to take a stand on the thorny, vexing issues that clutter our daily horizons. And it does so in the name of a solidly based Christianity that doesn't flirt with fads or fantasies. Whereas some Christian programs sidestep ethical and doctrinal questions in our day, Issues takes them head on in a fearless, responsible, thoughtful manner. Both head and heart are involved when Issues applies Holy Scripture.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a tax-deductible gift today. Donate online at issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
Welcome back. This is Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. D.A. Carson is our guest. We're talking about the new tolerance. He's research professor of New Testament at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School in Deerfield, Illinois, and author of more than 50 books, including his latest, The Intolerance of Tolerance. Let's go to the phones and see what David has to say. He's listening in Pittsburgh via the new Issues Etc. Android app. David, thanks for waiting on the line.
Yeah. I just had a comment for Dr. Carson to see his response. The way that the tolerance he's talking about traps us evangelical Christians who believe, like, Jesus is the way, the only way. And it's like we're permitted to say that. Like, I work as a chaplain in a hospital context. So you're permitted to have your personal belief that Jesus is the only way for you. But then it seems like you're forced to then say, well, he's a way. Like, in other words, he can be your way. You can be very vociferous about, I believe in Jesus, and I believe he is the Messiah, and I believe he's going to get me into heaven. But when it push comes to shove, you back off and say, well, he's a way.
David, thank you very much, and thanks for using the new Issues Etc. Android app and for listening in Pittsburgh. Dr. Carson, you actually go into some detail about this in the latter chapters of your book.
Yes, I mean, what's really at stake here is Christianity's claim to exclusiveness. That is, no one comes to the Father except by me, or does, as Peter puts it in the book of Acts, there is no other name given under heaven by which we must be saved. And it is important to see that some other religions do the same thing. Islam is pretty strong on saying that it is the only way, too. The irony from the point of view of my book is that if Christians were to say that whatever good you might find in other religions, they cannot provide a way to being reconciled to our Maker and our Judge, for that only Christ will suffice, that is considered so bad that we must be bad to say it. And thus, the irony is that in the name of being tolerant towards other religions, those who adopt this view of tolerance become intolerant towards Christians or other exclusivists. In other words, this whole new game of intolerance is riddled with so many inconsistencies that the notion is really becoming bankrupt. People just haven't wakened up to it yet.
Mark is listening in St. Louis. Thanks for being patient, Mark.
Hey, Pastor Todd. You may have said this using different language, and if so, I'm sorry I missed it. But I'm just wondering if part of the problem is that we've given up the belief in natural law, or, you know, and part of the solution is to recover the idea and understanding of natural law.
Well, that is a great question, and thank you very much for listening to St. Louis, Mark. Dr. Carson.
Historically, Christians have held somewhat different views on exactly the role of natural law. And certainly, if you have a widespread commitment in the culture to some understanding of natural law, then it holds politicians and Congress and judges and so on to some sort of moral account. But the fact of the matter is that whether you appeal to natural law or you appeal to a special revelation, the fact of the matter is that that is so far lost in so many sectors of the culture that it can no longer be part of the given. And as a result, political acts or legislative acts become the only sort of real law that there is. Some people are trying to reestablish a kind of natural law so that there is some sort of accountability. Certainly the founding fathers of the nation wanted to see us as one nation under God, and therefore government and legislators and judges and so on, all necessarily somewhat limited because they're still to be held accountable to a certain kind of moral code that was largely adopted in the nation. But with that code dissipated, with very few people compared with the past holding to natural law or to divine revelation even that really is authoritative for all humankind, whether it's acknowledged or not, then the only law that is acknowledged is finally that which is passed by governments. And that can be amazingly fickle and mutually contradictory from one generation or one legislative session or one Congress to another. And so it becomes far, far, far more unstable. Many secularist theologians, even though they don't like the notion, have actually started arguing Congress needs God, not because they believe there is a God, but because they think that some sort of accountability to something beyond what is passable in the current session is awfully good for integrity.
So you seem to say in your book that just the idea or the practice of democracy itself is not sufficient to guard us against the kind of nonsensical absurdities of the new tolerance because it seems like we've lost that foundation, natural law, in our practice of democracy.
That's exactly right. If one has to realize that the word democracy has different associations to it. If democracy simply means rule by majority, and that's all, then, for example, you could in theory, have a democratic government in a solidly Muslim country that would pass Sharia. That doesn't mean that I think that that's all good law. You could have a purely secular majority that passes all kinds of laws with respect to, you name it, abortion, pedophilia, polygamy, whatever the issues are. And who's to say that it's wrong if that's where the secular world goes? And yet on the other hand, you don't want a system where you abandon democracy and just put the power in the hands of a privileged few. The old saying is right: absolute power corrupts absolutely. You just don't want to do that. In other words, what Christians have to do is see that there are limitations to democracy. We've long cherished democracy because there has been a kind of Judeo-Christian heritage of shared moral values. But as that dissipates, we must see, as we should have seen earlier, that democratic government is really good for holding some people accountable, for turfing blighters out every few years, for making it possible to change things without a bloody revolution. It has all kinds of functional values. But by itself, it cannot produce a sure guidance toward truth and integrity or morality or anything else. It really is a cleanup system for getting rid of people every few years.
Are you arguing for not so much a political solution to this as, and I'm not saying as an ethos that needs to either be restored or changed?
Yes, that's exactly right. That is to say, that could come about by all kinds of events. I mean, God could bring about, for example, another massive evangelical awakening, as he did in the 18th century, the time of Edwards, in the 19th century as well, in events somewhat less known. It could happen again. God is merciful, and it can be so powerful that it can begin to change the public perceptions of all kinds of things. Or sometimes there is even a pendulum swing in the culture itself. And people go so far to the left that they actually begin to swing back to the right for all kinds of reasons, good, bad, or indifferent. And it could be, on the other hand, that we could go far enough off the deep end that there will be more and more persecution of people who don't sign on to the new kind of tolerance. I mean, there are some Western countries that are no less democratic than our own, for example, which have passed criminal hate laws for anybody who says anything, however mild, anything negative about, let's say, homosexuality. So it's quite possible to imagine a situation in which Christians are banned from university campuses. The refusal of the Supreme Court recently to listen to one such case does not bode well. And it's quite possible to imagine Christian ministers, even wise ones, landing up in jail because they hold certain unpopular views which are judged intolerant. And therefore, the culture decides that because they're intolerant, they will not tolerate these people. And it's, once again, in the name of tolerance, intolerance prevails. All of that is quite possible within the next decade or two. And I'm neither a prophet nor the son of a prophet. I don't know how it's going to turn out. But it could turn out that things will get a lot worse before they get better.
Let's turn to another concept here, and that is to the concept of secularization or secularism that goes along with the new tolerance. You say that you'd like to argue that many who espouse the new tolerance buy into one form or another of secularism as if it were a neutral stance. What's your point there?
Well, most people who describe themselves as secular think that that is not only the right position to hold, that is the position that conforms to reality, and faith is at most a sort of optional extra. But they think that it is, because it is right, the only neutral stance. It's all of these other religious people who take non-neutral stances, often this religious corner and that religious corner and some other religious corner, but the true neutral stance, the stance that accords with scientific and real-world reality, is secularism. And that's one of the reasons, therefore, why they keep arguing. They don't mind if people are religious, so long as their religion is very, very private. It must not intrude into the public domain where secularism is got to be king, and where that prevails, and at the same time government is becoming more and more intrusive into more and more private areas. Therefore, the private areas where religion may speak actually become smaller and smaller and smaller. Whereas Christians want to argue, if they're thoughtful at all on these matters, they want to argue first that secularism is itself an ism. It's a stance. In that sense, it's a quote-unquote religion. It's a publicly proclaimed stance that is not itself any more scientific or any less scientific than a religious stance. It's a stance with certain kinds of values, with certain kinds of goals, with certain kinds of worldviews.
Well, let's take a break right there. When we come back, let's pick up where we left off with Dr. D.A. Carson. We'll talk about the new tolerance for another 10 minutes with him on this Thursday afternoon. Stay tuned. You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org. There's an app for that.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
Is Christianity merely one limited half-true perspective on God? Find out in an article I've written for the latest Issues Etc. journal. It's titled, The Blind Men and the Elephant, and we'll send it to you for free. Just send an email to journal@issuesetc.org. You can also read about Pastor Christian Teve's journey from the agnosticism of a committed Darwinist to faith in Jesus Christ. The online Issues Etc. journal, journal@issuesetc.org. Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Dr. D.A. Carson is our guest. We're talking for the next 10 minutes about the new tolerance. He's a research professor of New Testament at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School in Deerfield, Illinois, and author of more than 50 books, including his latest, The Intolerance of Tolerance. Dr. Carson, even the most ardent secularist today that I know of that gets a voice in society still gives lip service to religious liberty. I mean, they still will talk about religious liberty in a somewhat positive sense. But it sounds like what you're saying is, along with this new tolerance comes not an outright elimination of religious liberty, but a redefinition, perhaps defining it away. What is the current definition of religious liberty under the new tolerance, or where is it likely to go under that way of thinking?
Under the new pressures, you are free to espouse any religion whatsoever, so long as it is private. But if you espouse a religion in which you say that somebody else is wrong, then at very least, although you will be tolerated, you will be judged bigoted and narrow-minded. You will be yelled down if you say, out of the framework of your confessional stance, for example, that killing a baby who is 8 months into the womb, in a month away from birth, to say that is wrong would, and it's wrong because it's destroying someone made in the image of God or something along those lines. You would be yelled down as destroying the wall of separation between church and state. You don't have the right to talk along those lines. Only the secular world has the right to speak in those areas, and so on. So there is quite a lot of legal literature now that is arguing this thing back and forth, and some have actually taken the view. It's pretty strong in Canada, and it's beginning to come down here now, that religious liberty needs to be curtailed somewhat, needs to be trumped somewhat by the more pressing need to adopt more of this new tolerance.
Let's see, a couple questions from our listeners. Tom, listening in San Angelo, Texas, says, the modern-day maxim, the only absolute is that there are no absolutes. However, Christianity is a religion of absolutes. Jesus is the only Savior. The triune God is the only God. The Ten Commandments are absolutes, not suggestions. All men are sinners, etc. This is why Christianity is not tolerated by our indulgent society and culture. What do you make of his thoughts there?
Well, that's largely right. But I would argue that confessional Christianity can't bend on those issues, but it must demonstrate itself therefore to be all the more loving and to produce good citizens and to be honest and careful in one's arguments towards others, but still not bend on what we hold to be, in fact, the truth. And I think that it is worth pointing out sometimes to people on other sides that by condemning Christians, they are becoming really, really intolerant. Secular universities often have a kind of visiting lecturer program that is available for any student group on campus. And so a few times Christian groups on campus have asked me to come on to a secular campus and lecture on something that would be an acceptable topic. And I've regularly chosen this topic, the intolerance of tolerance. And usually you get the place packed out with both students and lecturers. And actually, when you start spelling out how the new tolerance is really painfully intolerant, many of them actually begin to see it. I really do think that it's going to be important for Christians to stand up and really politely but carefully say, the emperor has no clothes. The new tolerance is not really all that tolerant. You have to live with some tensions in the culture without saying that people are wrong all the time. And meanwhile, if things do go south, then at the same time, Christians have to be prepared to suffer gladly for Jesus' sake.
How do you account for that blind spot? I mean, you and I can see it, and as you say, when you lay it out for a group of students or faculty who are gathered before you, they begin to see it too. But why, up until that point, is there that blind spot toward what appears to be, to so many of us, so clearly self-contradictory?
I think it's largely because there is such a deep, deep, deep commitment on the part of so many to a kind of philosophical naturalism, to a kind of secularism, where there is no moral voice from outside. And so we measure things from our own historic centers. One way of showing how subjective we are in this regard, in most Western countries, it is assumed that the ultimate bad is saying that other religions are bad, that is, in the religious sphere. But if you go to the Middle East, that's a ridiculous presupposition. In the Middle East, everybody believes that there's only one way. The only question is, which one? And so we begin, when you travel a little bit and begin to see that even some of the most cherished values in our culture are themselves products of an inherited frame of reference that is itself a value system like secularism, a value system like philosophical naturalism that says there's nothing more than matter and energy and space and time. That's all there is. But that is a value system that is shaping our thinking. That becomes so ingrained in the culture and is reinforced by our media, by the press, by our educational systems, by our universities, and so on, until it's just about impossible to think out the box until somebody points that out carefully, courteously, but emphatically. Look again, friend, the emperor has no clothes.
Anne listens in St. Louis. Anne, thanks for being patient.
Hi, I've been trying to formulate how to even say this, but two things I was thinking is it seems irrelevant to this discussion of tolerance as to whether truth is extant, whether it even exists. And also, I remember thinking of hearing this discussion before on Issues, etc., that it's illogical that everybody's religion could be true at the same time. It just is illogical. That's all I had to contribute.
Anne, thank you very much.
And you are right. You are right on the second point, absolutely. If one really understands and respects different religions in their individuality, it's actually disrespectful of them to say that they're actually saying the same thing. I have seen some people from minority religions who've listened to secularists tell them that we're all really saying the same thing, and they get really, really angry, thinking that this is almost a kind of cultural genocide in which the secularists are busy telling people what their religions really say. And so you are quite right. If you understand sympathetically the differences amongst religions, it really becomes intellectually forced, intellectually abusive to start saying, by contrast, that everybody's actually believing the same thing.
Two quick final questions. The first one from Joe, who asks, many times words simply morph into new meanings over time. Is this the case with the new definition of tolerance, or is this an intentional redefinition of the word? About a minute for a response.
Oh, I think it's primarily morphing with time because of cultural changes. Some of it may have been purposeful, but as I track out some of the differences in dictionary definitions across the decades, and you can see the changes taking place, and I doubt if somebody sat in a committee somewhere and conspired. I think that with the changing perceptions, people have changed their views on what tolerance is, and therefore they've changed the meaning and the use of the word.
Finally, then, what is the bottom line danger of this new tolerance?
Well, it depends. It depends whether you're looking at the bottom line danger for the nation or the bottom line danger for the Christian church, the bottom line danger for Christians who are being snookered by this. For Christians who are being tempted in this direction, the bottom line danger is they begin to lose confidence in the power and the exclusiveness and the truth of the gospel. That's a really big bottom line danger. And there what must be done is churches must teach the truth and expound Scripture carefully and refer back to Jesus again and again and again and hold Christians accountable to what Scripture actually says. In terms of the larger nation, regardless of how much pressure is put on the church, if we don't begin to clean up some of this, then undoubtedly there will be more and more authoritarian Congresses that will clamp down on freedoms of one sort or another, all in the name of tolerance, and there will be more repression in due course. I think that's probably inevitable, unless the Lord has mercy on us in one fashion or another.
Dr. D.A. Carson is a research professor of New Testament at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School in Deerfield, Illinois. He's authored more than 50 books, including his latest, The Intolerance of Tolerance. Dr. Carson, thank you very much for being our guest.
My privilege, Todd. Bye now.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Adrian Dorr of the Lutheran Witness magazine about God's design for the sexes. Also tomorrow, we'll play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. A nice dovetail to this conversation is something I've written kind of more at the popular level for general consumption in the Issues Etc. journal, the latest Issues Etc. journal, which, by the way, is absolutely free. I've written an article called The Blind Men and the Elephant. You heard us talk a little bit earlier about perspectivism. I deal with that, and I take on the story of the blind men and the elephant as a critique of Christian knowledge and truth. You can read all about that in the latest Issues Etc. journal, along with a Wittenberg Trail feature from Pastor Christian Teves. He talks about his journey from being an ardent and committed Darwinist and agnostic to the Christian faith in Jesus Christ. All in the latest Issues Etc. journal. You can read it for free. Just send us an email, journal@issuesetc.org, journal@issuesetc.org, and we will send you a copy of the latest Issues Etc. journal. You can also read back issues at our website, issuesetc.org. Click publications, and there'll be links to downloadable versions of those back issues of the Issues Etc. journal. If there is no foundation, no ground upon which we agree we stand, things like right, wrong, true, false, or if there is that ground but none of us can know really where it is or where we stand, if everything is relative, then it has to include propositions like that, right? If everything's a matter of perspective, then that statement itself is a matter of perspective. If there is no truth, or if truth is unknowable, is that truth knowable somehow? You can see why the new tolerance is not only logically self-refuting, in the end futile and absurd, but has such bad results. Not only in society, where, boy, can we see the bad results of this new tolerance, whether you call it political correctness or secularism, whatever you call it, we can see that so clearly. Why can't we see it? Especially we Christians, when this new tolerance, this sloppy, nonsensical way of thinking about truth and falsehood enters into the doors of the church, should open our eyes. It's just as dangerous in the church, in fact, even more dangerous in the church than it is in society. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.